So the question, are we more polarised than ever, and is Brexit making it worse? The last two elections in Northern Ireland, obviously they gave a very clear indication, not that much was needed, off the split here, with the DUP and Sinn Féin emerging as the two biggest parties by far. And earlier this week, 200 representatives from the Nationalist Civic Society wrote an open letter to the Taoiseach published in the Irish News. They called on Leo Varadkar to stand up for the equal rights of Irish citizens in Northern Ireland. What do you reckon? Maybe you don't vote along green and orange lines when you are in that ballot box, or perhaps you do and it's for, you believe, a very good reason. What would make you change your mind when you're processing who you should vote for? 030 30 80 55 55. The Irish News columnist Alison Morris is with us. Good morning to you, Alison.
Good morning.
Also with us, Sinn Féin, well, former Sinn Féin MLA, Dahi Mackay. Good morning, Dahi.
Good morning, Vinay.
And we also have Malachy O'Doherty, general journalist and all-rounder. How are you, Malachy?
Good morning, Vinay. Good morning, Alison.
We'll also speak to Professor John Tong in just a moment as well. Alison, if we start with you, did anything that you read in that letter, first of all, surprise you? And when it comes to how we vote, the green and orange thing, do you think it's something we will ever be able to move away from?
I don't think the content of the letter was particularly surprising. You can see that they were the kind of feelings that do exist among people, especially in the nationalist community, with the DUP Tory deal involved in these Brexit negotiations. There is that feeling of isolation, or people being left out in the cold. What is surprising and what is very unusual is to have members of civic society, people from academia, people from law, people from business, put their name to a letter like that. Because in Northern Ireland, in the place that we live in, there has always been a tendency for people who hold public positions to shy away from making their political views known, or from airing their political views in public, because they think maybe, you know, there'll be a backlash, it'll be judged, or, you know, cause them some kind of problem. So the fact that people did stick their head above the parapet, the fact that they did sign that letter, and the fact that it was people, you know, people such as, you know, Phil Scranton, loads of people from the legal profession, you know, people who would be very respected within all sections of community. I thought that that was a very loud signal. I thought that that was something that people should pay attention to and people should sit up and listen to.
Do you think, being honest, Alison, that Brexit, without Brexit and the discussion and the talks around that being on the table at the minute, which of course it is, would power sharing here be back up and running again?
I don't think so. And I think, you know, we've seen what happened, and we're back almost a full circle in a year from the RHI scandal. Was in, at this time last year, we were in, you know, full flow of RHI. You could see what way politics here was going. It does need a complete rework, and it does need a complete rethink. There's a lot of talk about going back to the initial agreements, going back to the Good Friday Agreement, going back to St Andrews. But I think there needs to be other additional things put on top of that. Safeguards, basically, to stop these sort of constant battles and fights over equality issues, fights over rights issues, before we could ever have a functioning assembly. Brexit just made it worse. You know, it's we've got to the point now where you have the DUP, you have the year of Theresa May. I think that what was very telling was on Friday when Theresa May issued a letter, and it was an address to the people of Northern Ireland. And when you read that, it wasn't an address to the people of Northern Ireland. It was an address to the unionist people of Northern Ireland. It was reassuring them that they remain part of the union, remain part of the UK. And it's almost as if the Prime Minister forgot that there's a whole other section of community who live here. There's the nationalist people make up almost half the population. And that seemed to have passed her by completely.
Dahi Mackay, are you buying any of this?
Yes, I think Alison's correct. I mean, if you go back some 20 years, there was certainly a sense that the Taoiseach at that time, whether it was Albert Reynolds or Bertie Ahern, should be representing the views of nationalists in the North. And certainly there is a sense amongst nationalism now that there's a risk of being left behind, of being abandoned. And I think the letter is a marker to the Taoiseach that, yes, there's negotiations ongoing in regards to the EU and indeed Stormont as well. But don't forget that we're here. Don't forget that we are Irish citizens. And don't forget that you have to stand up for our views as well, not just the people
on the
side.
I'm reading from the Irish News here. It says, we believe that the current crisis has come about fundamentally due to a failure to both implement and defend the Good Friday and St Andrews Agreement. The result has been a denial and refusal of equality, rights and respect towards the section of the community to which we belong, as well as everyone living here. So that's quite strong words there. Equality, rights and respect. For people that might challenge that and question that, how would you outline that? Give us a description.
Well, the point I would make, first of all, is the fact that, you know, the letter from Civic Nationalism, from Broad Nationalism, it isn't the first time that Civic or Broad Nationalism has put a marker down, because if you go right back to the time of the RHI scandal, you know, that was the time, this time last year, when Sinn Féin were coming under pressure from the grassroots, from that Civic Nationalism, to say enough is enough. So it isn't the case, as was outlined by some commentators yesterday, that this is a Sinn Féin initiative. It is very much coming from the grassroots, and Sinn Féin, in turn, through this year, has responded to how the grassroots view of Stormont has fundamentally changed since Arlene Foster's handling of the RHI, and indeed the disrespect that has been shown towards the gay community.
So in what's responsibility then, Dahi, we're talking about this letter and what you've said yourself should be aimed towards the DUP, and then in what should we be aiming towards Westminster and the moves they've made in the Brexit talks and wider field?
Well, it is aimed towards Dublin, because there's very much a sense that you cannot trust the British government, and I think Dublin are learning that more so now than ever, as are the EU negotiators, especially judging from the comments from David Davies over the weekend, where he, on the one hand, he was absolutely wedded to the agreement, and the other, he said it was quite a loose thing. So I think that there's a lot of chaos in Westminster at the moment, because there's so many competing parties, whether that's the DUP, whether it's the Remainers or the Brexiteers within the Tories. So there is a sense that could explode and result in an election over the next number of months. So I think that nationalism here is very much not only looking to their local nationalist parties, but also to Dublin to step up the mark and to ensure that our interests are guaranteed, not only in terms of the border, but in terms of a form of special status for the North and for the EU negotiations. Because there is a sense and a worry that the Dublin government will settle for a parallel to the customs union and single market membership, rather than having a special status for the North.
Okay, let's just bring in Professor John Tong at this point. You've written a book about the DUP. You've done much else, but quite often we talk to you about that on this programme. You'll know better than many how the DUP will be processing this letter and the accusations put towards them, equality, rights and respect. How do you think they'll be processing all of this?
I don't think it's going to shift the DUP. They'll just see it as an unwelcome interference, anything that the Taoiseach does in respect to the North, that you'll have the standard DUP response, and they'll try and brush it away. I mean, ultimately, I'm not sure that the Taoiseach can do that much about defending Northern nationalist rights. It can do in the context of Brexit, certainly, but in terms of the things that have helped derail Stormont beyond Brexit, like an Irish Language Act, I mean, the British government really has reneged on what it said it would do. It's there in the St Andrews Agreement. We know that. It says that an Irish Language Act will be reintroduced. So, you know, the ball really is in the British government's court in the absence of a devolved assembly or executive. I understand, you know, the sentiment of the letter for sure. I mean, why wouldn't you look to a southern government to defend your rights at a time when the British government needs the Irish government and vice versa more than ever before? In terms of the broader context of how far Brexit is pulling the two communities apart, well, you've got to remember that, I mean, the Good Friday Agreement was never an agreement based on reconciliation anyway. It was only about conflict management. It was about the management of differences between two communities, a Protestant Unionist British and a Catholic Irish nationalist community. It wasn't about, in many ways, overcoming those differences. So I think people were perhaps expecting too much of the agreement. But I think what the agreement did hold out hope for was that institutional cooperation, functional institutions in which there is proper power sharing and respect for each other's community, would trickle down and you'd have greater integration at grassroots level. The irony is that it's at grassroots level that things have improved. Most surveys, when they ask the question, do you think relations between the two communities are getting better or worse, most people will say better. But it's the institutions that are dysfunctional. And frankly, you know, there's a limit to what the Taoiseach can do, the Irish government can do, in terms of protecting nationalist rights where things stand at the moment. I mean, one solution would be for Fine Gael to stand in the North, but even nationalists are not in the North, are not that keen on that, if you look at the survey evidence on that. I don't think Fine Gael are, frankly, that interested in the North either, once you take out, and it's a big take out, I accept, the Brexit context.
You've got two letters than Professor John Tong. One sent from Theresa May to every household in Northern Ireland. Alison, you heard her say it there this morning. It reads like it was sent with unionists in mind. And then another letter sent by nationalists to Leo Varadkar asking for him to stand up for their rights. So a tale of two letters.
Yeah, I mean, and it's, you know, it's a question of either community trying to defend their interests, which is perfectly natural. I mean, you know, this is a very broad-ranging letter that has come from Northern nationalists. It's probably the biggest sort of incidence of pan-nationalism that we've seen in a long time, because these are, you know, a lot of those the signatories to that letter were not simply paid-up Sinn Féin supporters. And I think that, you know, it'd be wise of the Irish government to take note of it. But in terms of a practical response, what exactly can the Irish government do would be the question that I would pose, because, you know, when you haven't got, you need, frankly, the restoration of the institutions to achieve the rights that nationalists are demanding, or you need the British government to legislate and not renege on what it promised more than a decade ago.
So you have Malachy O'Doherty. We've mentioned that the two different letters there, so to speak, both sides of the community, we talked about polarisation, they both are concerned that they're going to be left behind as a result of Brexit, there is concern there. How do you interpret that?
Well, I think there's two separate strands here, if you like. There is the whole equality agenda that Diane Allison talked about, and I think that was, in a sense, that's a crisis within relationships, and it's a crisis within devolution. But it was not an engine driving us towards a united Ireland. Brexit is that. Brexit has changed the thing fundamentally. Brexit provides something that the Provos were never able to provide, which was a practical argument for a united Ireland. Brexit creates the circumstance. Brexit has, if you like, awakened the Catholic middle classes and turned them back into nationalists, you know. So I think the earth has moved. I think we're in a tectonic shift here. And I think that unionism, maybe nationalism should be sending a letter to Arlene Foster rather than Leo Varadkar, because unionism and English nationalism have completely failed to understand this. Unionism, I mean, for the past couple of years since the referendum, I've been talking to people like David Trimble and others, you know, who basically see this as Sinn Féin machinations. You see, Ian Duncan Smith talking about Varadkar as if he's, as if he's a rabid Republican himself, which he's not, and completely misreading the situation in Ireland as mischief-making rather than concern about an actual problem.
When we go back, Malachy, to the voting habits of people, you know, and how we do, whenever we go into the ballot box, how we decide who should get our vote. I've often heard people say it's a generational thing in terms of voting on the green and orange lines, and when future generations come along, they will consider more the policies and exactly who they're voting for as opposed to that umbrella. Do you think that there's any truth in that?
No, I think what happened in the last two elections we had last year were polarisation. But they were polarisation around the equality agenda, around the growth of Sinn Féin, around the question of whether devolution can come back in its previous form or not, around Martin McGuinness's assertion that there will be no return to a status quo. Brexit is a different issue. What I'm saying is that all those issues certainly are very, very critical, and they do produce increased polarisation, and that's unquestionably what we've seen in the past year. But Brexit is nuclear, Brexit is something which raises the whole game to a different level. Brexit can deliver a united Ireland. The argument over the equality agenda can't.
Let's take a few calls on this at this point. Alan in Carrickfergus first on this morning. Go ahead, Alan.
Morning, Vinny. Yeah, I just wanted to make a couple of points about the letter. The first thing it shows is how badly Sinn Féin and the SDLP actually represent nationalists in Northern Ireland whenever they have to write a letter to Leo to look after them. And secondly, sometimes when we have discussions about the likes of nurses' pay, one of the things that's brought up is premiership footballers and what they earn.
Yes.
And suddenly James McLean has his name on this letter, and we're supposed to now accept that he's downtrodden and has no rights. I mean, it's nothing to do with his religion. It's to do with his ability, as it is with all the professors and all the lawyers. And
One of the questions this morning we're asking, Alan, is it always still to do with religion when it comes to voting here? You know, James McLean, surely, if he wants to, he can use his position to stand up as he sees it for other people in Northern Ireland, nationalists in Northern Ireland, if he wants to. But what I'm asking you is, do you think we move away at all when it comes to... Yes, but when it comes to how we vote, do you think it's... have we changed how we've done that for many years at all? Do you think people do consider policies? Or do you think it comes down to religion, it comes down to unionists versus nationalists and the viewpoint from that beyond... let's talk about Brexit, for example, at the minute, Alan.
It basically comes down to unionists and nationalists mostly. Some people don't, but most people do. But some of the people in your studio, like Daffy and Alison, they're happy to split. They want society split. They want to split from the United Kingdom and go with United Ireland. And they talk about respect.
Well, let's just bring them back in at this point, because I'm sure you'll want to respond to that, Daffy and Alison. Alison, you yourself first. You hear what Alan has said there. Alison, are you still there? I think we've lost Alison. Daffy, I don't think people will be very surprised to hear your view. You want a United Ireland, therefore you're one of these people that just votes along the same lines because that end goal is what you want.
Yes, there's no surprise there, obviously. But in terms of what Malachy was saying earlier about Brexit certainly does make United Ireland a greater possibility. It's interesting because the DUP used to trumpet about the Catholic middle class, the Catholics that were happy within the union. Now what we're finding, certainly if you look at the recent Lucid talk poll, is there's a number of people from a unionist background who would prefer a United Ireland if it meant staying in the European Union, if it meant staying in the single market, if it was in their economic interest. So I think that it's not as black and white as we make out. Certainly there are clear demographics reflected in election results. But there are enough sort of unionists beginning to reconsider their position within the union, especially after learning of the fact that there hasn't been any assessments about what the economic impacts of Brexit are going to be by the British government, as David Davis
has. You say it's not black and white, Dahi, but for many people it is.
Yeah, certainly there are many people...
For you, to an extent, it is.
Yes, I mean, I'm a Republican, I always will be a Republican. There are many unionists who will be exactly the same, but there are a certain percentage of people in the middle who will go either way, dependent on political events and dependent on their own selfish economic interests. And if people think that they're better off in an Ireland that remains within the European Union, within the single market, within the customs union, and if they are really concerned that we are facing into a significant recession if we stay within the union, then they will certainly decide to go in a different direction. I don't think anybody should be surprised at that. You know, it's like that old Clintonism, it's the economy, but for many people out there, regardless of their religious background, it is about the economy, and it is about putting a roof over their children's heads.
OK, Daffy Mackay, thank you. Let's bring in Ben Lowry at this point, Deputy Editor of the Newsletter. Ben, what are your thoughts on what you've heard so far this morning?
Well, I didn't hear all of the discussion, to be honest, but obviously I have thoughts on the letter because it's been around for a few days. And I don't know why so much weight is being given to it, to be honest. It's an undiluted Republican analysis of the problem. It's a bit of a pot boiler. It throws in everything. And it pushes this line that people's rights are being rejected, which is rubbish.
When it comes to the entire discussion on how we vote on the impact that Brexit is having on the peace process here, some people talking about their concern that this, what is happening at the moment, will derail the peace process. Do you think there's any strength in that?
I think there are two issues that need to be disentangled. One is Brexit, and the other is the other issues that are the other problems that there are. There's no question that Northern Ireland's very polarised at the moment. It's a very disturbing thing that it is polarised, and then lots of countries are polarised. France is very polarised.
Are we more polarised now than we've ever been?
Well, my memory doesn't really go back to the 1970s, and obviously the 1970s is the worst time in the early 1970s. 1972 was the worst time in the history of Northern Ireland in terms of violence. But I do think it's the most polarized it's been since the hunger strikes, although there's no appetite and there's no inclination to violence, it seems. Thank goodness. Very, very polarized, very, very bitter. It's the most polarized that I remember it being since then. And that's not a good situation. And along comes Brexit at just the wrong time. Although, of course, Brexit is partly because they're feeling, because Britain, lots of countries are feeling very polarized, as I said. And I think we have to disentangle these two, because Brexit is a huge challenge for the UK, a huge challenge for particular challenge for Northern Ireland, given that we've got a land border, given that these are still bitterly divided on it. So I think we have to disentangle that from the other things that are being said, and the other, you know, Sinn Féin has seen Brexit as an opportunity, and it's seen a lot of things like RHI as an opportunity, and it's a political party, and it's a large political party in Northern Ireland, and it has every right to seize opportunities.
Okay, Ben Lowry from the newsletter, thank you. Let's go to another caller, Plunkett in Galbally, is that? Where are you at this morning?
Yes, Galbally, County Tyrone.
What do you reckon from what you've heard? Do you agree with it?
Well, there's a lot of things there. Firstly, I disagree entirely with Ben Lowry in terms of saying that the so-called open letter in Monday's paper was a Republican document. It is far from a Republican document. There's not one ounce of Republicanism in it. But I would like to thank those who drafted the letter for doing me the courtesy of not asking me to sign it. And I know that's a position taken by many lawyers, particularly across parts of Tyrone and Fermanagh. One of the things that you haven't... The other thing, of course, is that I find myself in the almost unique position of agreeing with virtually everything that Malik O'Doherty says. Brexit has moved the parameters. It has changed the the possibility of once and forever removing Britain from the internal affairs of Ireland. But the one thing you just haven't touched at all, none of your contributors have touched on, is the Taoiseach's reply to the letter. And the Taoiseach's reply was quite simple when he said that the Belfast Good Friday disagreement is the Dublin administration's guiding light. And in response to the letter, he pledged to uphold the provisions of the Belfast Good Friday Agreement with regard to the constitutional status of Northern Ireland and the principle of consent. In other words, he commits the Irish government to the continued support for the unionist veto and for the ongoing denial of Ireland's sovereign right to national determination. And this narrow attitude to rights, that some rights matter and others don't, that doesn't strike a chord with Republicans at all. Republicans have a right, and indeed everyone on the island has a right, to decide the future of Ireland free from external impediment. The Good Friday Agreement was never designed to deliver nationalist rights, and certainly never designed to deliver a united Ireland, let alone an Irish Republic.
What about the initial topic we brought up this morning, Plunkett, in terms of that line that has split us for many, many years here, that's characterised Northern Ireland? Do you think, have we moved in any way away from or closer to that?
I moved away closer to what, sorry? Really?
Well, the polarisation, the fact that
Well, it depends what you mean by the polarisation.
Well, the fact that last year, you know, the last election, DUP, Sinn Féin, you know, the huge swell in their votes, and the fact that we don't seem to want to vote for middle parties, regardless.
Both parties have moved to a centrist populist position. They're the opposite sides of a coin. The DUP are in a somewhat position of political strength. New Sinn Féin will accept anything. They will change their direction at the drop of a hat if it's more populist. The Good Friday Agreement was sold to Republicans as not being a Republican document, and that there would be a battle a day to challenge it. Which parts of it's been challenged? A year ago, just over a year ago, Sinn Féin, New Sinn Féin, and the DUP were paying a press advisor to tell us all how well things had gone for 10 years. What changed? Who was asleep at the wheel?
Okay, let's go to Robert and Carrickfergus next. Good morning, Robert. Go ahead.
Good morning, Sonny. This letter saying that nationalists feel that their rights aren't the same as unionists, well, have the same rights as I have in the country. You know, and the 200-odd people that signed this letter, I don't see their rights being done away with, because every single one that signed that letter is making a great living out of living in the United Kingdom.
Do you think, Robert, as we suggested earlier, that both sides of the community feel under pressure as a result of Brexit. They have concerns about being left behind, regardless of whether you're a unionist or a nationalist.
It was happening before Brexit. Sinn Féin, when Gerry made the statement about he'd kill the bees by equality, that's when the unionist people started to take notice, because everything that they wanted, equality, as long as it suited Sinn Féin, nobody else.
OK, Robert, thank you. Alex in Lisburn. Alex, go ahead.
No, I just listened to some of the commentators. You had one recent there talking about the Good Friday Agreement and the rights of the nationalist people and Republican people. You know, the Good Friday Agreement enshrined Northern Ireland's right to exist as long as majority wished, and it was endorsed both sides of the border, and he's very quick to...
You hear people say the complete opposite this morning, Alex. They would challenge
They can say all the like. It was why
are you so confident in it?
I'm not necessarily confident. I'm not necessarily confident in the union, but you know, people seem to. I think to an extent, and right from the very beginning, people from the Republican view never really accepted what the Good Friday Agreement actually said. They never fully accepted it, and that's been part of the problem. But what I would say, you know, in terms of the border, I do feel Brexit has the potential to undermine the border dramatically, so it has, and undermine support for the union dramatically.
We talk all the time on this program, Alex, about the likes of health issues or education, mm-hmm. and you know, we have stories on where people are really struggling. They're maybe on a waiting list for an operation, or a loved one have been for maybe years, yep. in some circumstances. But do you think, when it comes down to it, the majority would still put issues like the union on, or removal from it above that?
Well, cast your mind back to the last election. On both sides, the two parties basically went and published papers on health and education and the normal things you'd expect in a normal democracy. And two other parties basically banged the big drum. And who did the people
vote for? Well, let me ask you then, when it comes to your priorities, whether it's to do with voting or not, but just your priorities as being someone that lives in Northern Ireland, would you put the union or removal from it above the likes of health and education?
I think if you had a border poll and say 52% said to do away with the border, I think there would be an enormous amount of instability.
That's not what I asked you, Alex.
Well, that's basically why I would vote the way I did. That's why I'd be inclined to vote to keep the border, because I think you can't divorce that from health. I mean, you can't say if there was massive civil unrest, which you've seen the flag protest. There's some very bloody minded people out there on both sides. And if you had a thing where there's a small majority that decides to vote for Dead Iron, I can't imagine the handover would be smooth and there'd be no civil unrest, and that could well fill your hospitals for people. So you can't necessarily divorce one from the other.
Okay. Alex, stay there for just a moment. You mentioned the flag protest. Just so happens that Jamie Bryson has also called the programme. Good morning, Jamie.
Hi, Vinny.
What do you reckon?
Well, I think the media analysis of this letter has been absolutely appalling. I think we've missed the key part of it, where here we have 200 nationalists who have bandied together in what is essentially a sectarian civic pack to try and ostracise.
They would deny that, and you know they would. Do you understand, Jamie, the reason they felt that they needed to sign that letter?
Well, no, I don't, because they signed that letter in their professional capacities. They didn't sign that as individuals. So therefore, we now have people designating themselves as nationalist journalists, nationalist solicitors, nationalist academics. It's absolutely appalling, and it's an appalling attempt to divide civic society and ostracise those that aren't pushing for that nationalist agenda. And I don't think the media in any regard has drilled down on that, because if this was unionism, could you imagine 200 unionist solicitors, academics, put their name to a letter, identified themselves as unionists, calling for
You can't be that surprised, Jamie, that, say, for example, the likes of James McLean, in terms of, you know, identifying themselves as nationalists, I'm sure would very happily identify yourself as a unionist.
No, but Vinny, if you look at the letter, the people that signed it, and I look specifically at professional people such as solicitors, barristers, and journalists, those people in their professional lives are meant to be neutral and impartial, yet they have designated themselves in their professional capacity, not their personal capacity, as nationalist solicitors or barristers. That is absolutely appalling.
Let's get Alison's response to that. Alison, obviously you work for the Irish News.
Right, well, what I would say was, when you look at the letter, to say that people, as if they designate as nationalist, like it's some kind of dirty word for a start, you know, it's a very normal position to take in Northern Ireland. People are nationalists, people are unionists. But second of all, to be a professional and to have signed that letter, I don't think in any way brings your professionality into any kind of dispute. If we look back at the history of Northern Ireland, Desi Bowe, who was one of the founding members of the DUP, was a barrister. He was a barrister who represented Republicans during the Supergrass trials. his politics did not affect his work. Jim Allister is a barrister who's a member of the DUP. Throughout his time practicing, Jim Allister represented people from all sections of the community. Allison, so to say that because a lawyer or solicitor signed that letter that they are no longer neutral is a complete nonsense.
Well, they signed it in their professional capacity. If you look at your own paper and how it was listed, people are listed by their profession. It is a letter by nationalists listed by their profession. Why did you not sign it?
I just think that you completely missed the whole point of what
Why
the letter was aiming
it,
to do. Why did I not sign it? Well, first of all, I was not saying if I was, I probably wouldn't have signed it because there are aspects of the letter that I possibly don't agree with. But that has nothing to do with the people who did sign it. The people who signed it because that is what they decided as a group of academics, of solicitors, of business people, of Irish language activists. They felt that they weren't getting a voice in these current negotiations and asked the Irish government, could they make sure that they protect the rights of Irish citizens? Irish citizens whose rights are protected under the Good Friday Agreement, as we know,
okay,
have the right to self-determination.
Well, Jimmy, as well, many people, Jimmy, that...
would have compromised you to sign that in your view.
I have no idea why you're asking about me. We're talking about the letter.
Any journalist. Do you think it would professionally compromise any? Do you think Stephen Nolan could sign that letter?
I'm not sure whether Stephen Nolan would have signed the letter or not. I don't think that that's the point. When you look at the section...
Well, I do
the,
think
by
it's
By the
point.
Way, can I just say, under the media, the people who are listed under the media, the majority of them are political commentators. They're not actually working journalists, which I would be. Which is a different thing, and political commentators are paid to give their view, and that was their view.
Jimmy, many that signed that letter would say that they are fighting for the rights of everyone in Northern Ireland, not just nationalists.
But why did they designate it as a nationalist letter then? If they were sending a letter for the rights of everyone in Northern Ireland, how many unionists did they open it up to?
The point is that the unionists have currently a voice in these talks because the DUP have a pact with the Tory government. That is the point.
Hold on, one at a time. Jamie, what do you say to Alison, just the point she just made in terms of the Tory pact with the DUP?
Well, civic nationalism have made a sectarian pact. That is what has happened here. And the media have failed to challenge it, failed to drill down on it.
Well, I think you've tried to challenge it this morning, Jimmy, but we're asking you a question and you're not actually answering it. So just what Alison has said there in terms of the reason behind the need they feel for this letter being because of the Tory DUP and the link there.
Well, you started off by saying, Vinny, that it was for the rights of everybody, the letter.
No, I said, Jamie, what I said was that some people that signed that letter would say that they were doing that for everyone. But I'm just asking you to respond to Alison's point there.
Well, nationalists don't have an elected voice because Sinn Féin would sit in Westminster and they collapse the Assembly. It's their own fault.
But I guess the point that Alison's trying to make is then therefore that's why the people that signed that letter felt that they needed to do so.
Exactly, and that makes my point for me, that it's a civic nationalist pact.
Okay, Alison Morrison, thank you very much. Jamie, just finally with yourself, we were talking there, I asked that last caller, Alex, when it comes to issues and voting and priorities, would you put the likes of health and education in terms of what you feel is important when you go into the ballot box below the union?
Well, of course, the popular answer would be that we put those issues first, but of course we live in Northern Ireland, we don't, and I always vote for the union first and foremost, and those who will be strongest in protecting the union.
Okay. Jamie Bryson, thank you very much.